We did reach out to the University of Iowa Police Department for an interview or comment. As of this newscast, we have not heard back.
Oh yeah, what are we going to be talking about? Just trial?
I mean, that's all that's on my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got extensive notes. I've got audio from the trial that we can listen to. Let me just check. I've got 25 minutes of audio. I probably shouldn't play all that, right?
It depends on how good it is.
Yeah.
If it's full of laughs, then yeah.
Some of it, yeah. I'll try to make sure we definitely hear the really good stuff. This is Rock Hard Caucus episode 140. It is March 17th of 2024. Evan and I are here on another lovely Sunday morning. The sun is out. I just had to verify.
He had to check. Had to
I haven't looked outside.
Pull the darkness curtains away.
Yeah. It's been a big week for Rock Hard Caucus in general. It's been a big week for Iowa City. We're going to talk mostly today about our friend Tara McGovern's trial. I interviewed Tara a couple months ago, mostly about music, but we did talk about the charges here. And we've been just raising awareness on every episode, every subsequent episode, about what's going on and raising the community consciousness of the subject of jury nullification, the concept.
Yes. Which can be applied to any trial.
It can, for sure. Yeah, we're not going to stop mentioning that, I don't think.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it's important. It's an important tool for people of conscience.
Yeah. If the Johnson County attorney wants to prosecute any more of your friends, then, you know, we're going to need more jury nullification awareness.
Yeah. And I'm not going to say, because like there's no way to really tell if there was a direct connection, but it may be paid off. I don't know if we should claim credit for that, but, you know. Okay, the first thing I wanted to talk about briefly about the trial is the procedure for expanded media coverage of trials. So, like, whenever there's a trial that's open to the public, somebody has to fill out a form requesting expanded media coverage. And this is, I think, at the discretion of the judge on the case. And it basically just means members of the media can come and use electronic devices to take notes and record audio. And someone from a newspaper will likely be there taking photos. So in order, like we're media. I think officially we have
100%.
To just, we have to own it. We're media.
Yeah. I saw your little badge. So I don't have a badge.
I can make you one real easily.
Yeah, I guess the materials aren't too expensive.
I probably got another old work badge here somewhere that you can have. So you have to reach out to the coordinator for your judicial district in order to make sure that you are like recognized as a media person. Basically, that's it. You have to let them know that you're going to be covering the trial and you have to wear proper identification. The expanded media coordinator for judicial district, I believe we're in 6, so the Johnson County Courthouse, is Zach Kucharski, who is executive editor at the Cedar Rapids Gazette. So a member of the media is the guy who's like coordinating media access.
Interesting.
Which, you know, I'm very new to this. I don't know much about this, but it seems like that is a potential issue, like conflict.
Yeah.
Right?
Local media is super, super cutthroat. You gotta, gotta cut off access to the other networks.
Right. I don't think he does that, but my experience was a little weird. Like, I emailed him. I could pull up the exact dates, but I emailed him initially, and I explained that, like, I am very new to this, so if you have any, like, guidance for me on what I should and should not do, I would appreciate it. He replied within, like, an hour of that first email and asked me what I was planning on doing, like what I needed to do to cover the trial, and if I was representing any particular media outlet.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and you are.
I am. I said I really just need to take notes on my phone and record audio. That's all I want to do. And I am representing the local news and politics podcast, Rock Hard Caucus. And then it was radio silence for 3 weeks.
Yeah. And I looked at like the criteria for being, you know, a member of the observing media or whatever. And it's like,
yeah,
it definitely allows for like bloggers. If you regularly write or talk about publicly like any of this stuff, then you're mm-hmm. allowed to attend as a member of the media.
Yeah. It's explicit on the like Iowa courts website. They have an FAQ and it specifically says bloggers, people who do this in any medium are media.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes sense. Media.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what that means.
Yes.
Yeah. So I emailed him three times over the, or like three more times after I wasn't getting a response from him over the course of, I think, 3 weeks. I was just like once a week checking in like, hey, I haven't heard from you. Just want to make sure everything's cool. Never heard back from him. I emailed the the communications director of the Iowa judicial branch. I forget his name, Steve something, just in case. Like, I emailed him and I was like, hey, I just want to like say that the regional coordinator is not responding to my messages. And that guy never responded to me either. But then like a couple days before the trial, I was just CC'd on like an email to media people, like with IPR and the Gazette and everything. Mm-hmm. I was just CC'd.
I'm in.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I've been reluctantly accepted.
It's like they don't want to take a podcast called Rock Hard Caucus seriously.
I know,
it's
but
messed up.
The Gazette has had to write about us before.
Yeah, that's right.
I wonder if they object to, you know, our constant rude criticism of their writers or something.
Yeah, they got to protect that Miss Cole lady from our our criticism.
She did, you know, speaking of her, she did release her column this morning.
Oh, really?
About the trial.
Oh, no.
She attended the trial as well. It's mostly a lot of hand-wringing about how blocking traffic could cause a medical emergency.
I was
going to
say,
whatever.
Oh, did she come out in favor of, like, civil rights or anything? Or no, she's just going to whine about how it's, like, a crime, a horrible crime to block traffic for 10 minutes.
Yeah, she did. I mean, I don't really want to read a lot of this, but she did say, you know, Tara Dutcher isn't a criminal. That's in here.
Okay, that's good. It's a good start.
Yeah. There, yeah, yeah. Dutcher was acquitted, rightfully so. The state did not prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Dutcher's actions met the specific elements, the accused crimes. All right, despite the grammatical errors there, you know, at least she's acknowledging that justice was done. But one thing, at the very end, so there is an asterisk somewhere in the middle of this article, and I was like, what the hell is this? There's a note at the end. For reasons of conscience, the author respectfully declines to use they, them as individual pronouns.
Okay. I wonder if they apply that to, like, any time where they're referring to an individual. Okay. You know, they, them don't necessarily have to refer to a group of people.
Right, yeah. Singular they is, you know, it happens naturally in speech, you know, regardless of if you're thinking about gender all the time. Yeah.
What a principled stand from... from this author.
Respectfully declines. It's all about respect, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, it was this lady's boss that I had to go through to be, you know, officially recognized as a member of the media in the courthouse. Seems like potentially an issue.
Did they post any other articles about this?
I believe they did. They had like a real reporter in the room too.
A real reporter?
Yeah, their crime reporter who... I'm sure I've said something mean about on the podcast before.
Yeah.
I guess that is
a good point to make, that opinion columnists are not reporters. You have a greater claim to media.
Yeah, in terms of reporting, I guess, you know, I was reporting in real time through the whole trial. It was very slanted coverage, of course.
Right, right.
I was sharing facts also. All right, so getting into the trial, do you know what a motion in limine is? Limine?
No, no idea.
Okay, it is a pretrial motion that seeks the exclusion of specific evidence or arguments from being presented during a trial.
Okay.
So basically, the prosecution, you know, wrote this whole thing about stuff that they didn't want to come up in the trial. And this has to be, like, followed, I guess. Subject to the whatever the judge says about it. But these are the things in the motion in limine that the state requested. Defendant through counsel may not argue that the jury may disregard the laws of the state of Iowa.
That's, yeah. It's a given, I think.
Any argument that the defendant's actions were constitutionally protected or that the statute is unconstitutional. The role of the jury is to decide questions of fact, not law. Again, it's more about jury nullification.
Mm-hmm.
But this is where it gets interesting. Stuff that I feel is very relevant, they wanted to be excluded. The fact that seven individuals were charged out of the incident and the allegation that the seven identify as transgender or non-binary.
Yeah, I think they might want to know that. I think it might color the perception of events a little bit.
Yeah, and that never did come up. So the jury didn't necessarily know that. But if I had been them, I would have questioned, you know, out of...
Yeah.
They saw a video
of
the incident.
Lots of people.
Yeah, like 150 or so people. Why is this person on trial?
Mm-hmm.
Out of all the stuff we're seeing in this video...
Yeah. And it wasn't a Matt Walsh event. I mean,
this was the Chloe Cole one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
My mistake. But I doubt that they went into a lot of detail about what the event was actually about.
Actually, yeah, not that much. They talked more about Matt Walsh at the Marbles trial than they did about Chloe Cole at this trial.
Mm.
Yeah. And then the last one is very interesting as well. The state wanted to exclude any reference to an allegation of unreasonable force by a non-witness member of the University of Iowa Police Department and an unidentified individual that occurred after the conduct for which the defendant is charged. I didn't check the timeline on that, but...
You can't talk about how the police did crimes.
Right, right. Now that the trial's over, I feel a little more comfortable talking about what I have seen.
Yeah?
I watched all the body cam footage related to this. And they're talking there about University of Iowa Police Department officer Daniel Hugger. He was getting real physical with the protesters. I also witnessed this with my own eyes. I was standing right there.
So he's more of a pusher than a hugger, you'd say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Okay. I saw a lot of pushing. I saw zero hugging that night. And the allegation that they're referring to here is there's an unidentified individual who remains unidentified, and I don't know this person, and I don't know how much effort the UIPD has put into identifying him. He's definitely cis presenting. Like, he looks just like a white dude, so maybe that has something to do with him not being on trial. But he was repeatedly entering the crosswalk while the cops were, like, shoving people back onto the curb, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, Daniel Hugger pushed him pretty hard. And Hugger is shorter than this unidentified individual and was pushing up, and his hand went on this dude's throat. And I've seen this from multiple angles. So, you know, regardless of intent, the footage that I've seen shows a cop pushing a guy by the neck from the front, you know? And
wow.
The dude on video is like, this dude just choked me. He just tried to choke me out, you know? And
was he in uniform or not? I guess I misunderstood.
Yeah,
that
he was.
Okay, so yeah. He had a name tag. Like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He was very easily identifiable.
Yeah, he was in full uniform.
Okay.
Had his badge number visible and all that. Yep. So yeah, they really did not want the defense to talk about this among other, you know, incidents of physical contact between police and protesters that, you know, were part of Tara's motivation for being on the scene, being near where the conflict was happening, which ended up being their whole argument was that Tara is guilty of interference with official acts for being near an officer and filming him. So they kind of had to dance around the Hugger incident. All right. I've got audio, so I'll try to get to that. The judge was Jason Burns, who, you know, I wouldn't expect to like a judge. Like, what's their job? What have they done? You know? he seems cool without me knowing that much about him. He was very understanding, and I think as fair as you can be within this system. There was an incident where somebody may have vandalized the bathroom outside of the courtroom, seemingly in an attempt to get a message to the jury. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when something like that happens, it's possible, you know, if you have a judge who's a hard ass, they could close the trial to the public, you know, force everyone out of the courthouse. But mm-hmm. This was at the end of day one. After the jury had left, he addressed the public who was in attendance, and he was like, listen, I understand that you feel strongly about this case, and you have good intentions for the defendant by doing this, but a mistrial would actually be very bad for them. So please don't try to influence the jury. Don't try to contact them.
I feel like judges feel like they have a little bit more personal reputation to defend than a prosecutor, because they're usually there for, you know, decades.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's a job you do for a long time, and your name gets reported in the media a lot. Like every notable case that you rule over
mm-hmm.
gets reported in the media. Yeah, I don't know. He was very supportive of everyone being present and watching this, and he actually encouraged us to email him after the trial concluded with any of our thoughts, which I did. I emailed him and I was like, "Hey man, I'm not a big fan of the American criminal justice system, but I appreciate the way that you handled this." He seems like a nice guy. The prosecutor did not seem a very nice guy or very good at this, to be completely honest.
Sounds like they fumbled a little bit on the case they brought forth.
Yeah. His name was Jacob Benke, which may sound very similar to Binky, who's been a recent figure of interest on our program. Binky. He seems pretty young, like maybe mid-20s. So they've got the new guy on this civil rights prosecution.
Yeah, that seems to be a theme with Iowa prosecutions of protesters. they choose the youngest prosecutor that they have on the deck. Again, probably because of the reputation. What was the other trial that we were talking about? Oh, it was the Andrea Sahori trial, I believe.
Oh, right. Yeah, they brought sent out an intern or something.
Yeah, she was a Drake law student who was
oh my god.
Yeah. Again, they don't want to risk the reputation of any of the senior prosecutors.
Right.
By bringing forth this bogus case. They probably knew how flimsy it was.
Yeah. My feeling about this is, you know, they expected that they could pressure everyone into taking a plea deal. And then they wouldn't have had to go through this embarrassing trial. It was honestly, members of the jury were laughing at points.
Yeah. It's... That's absolutely, I'm sure. They think they can plea out anyone. They can intimidate anyone into just saying that they're guilty of literally nothing.
Okay, opening statement. I can summarize this quickly. The prosecution's opening statement was to establish that the IMU, the intersection right there, if you block that, a lot of cars will end up being trapped, which we've talked about before. And a lot of drivers who had nothing to do with the Chloe Cole event were inconvenienced. And as a major example, one of the CAM buses was not able to turn right and go up the hill. So a whole bus was stopped by this protest. And this really caught my attention during the prosecution's opening statement. He said that Tara's interaction with Lieutenant Tyrell, who was kind of in charge of the UIPD that night. The prosecution claimed that Tara was encouraging other protesters to defy police orders and claiming that they had video evidence of that. And again, as someone who has seen all of the video evidence that could have potentially been presented as evidence, I was very, very doubtful of that. I think I would have remembered Tara taking a leadership role and telling people, don't listen to the cops. Fuck these pigs. Tara was very conscientious and careful about their words and actions that night, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And it you know, acquitted on both counts. So,
yeah.
So I'd say that it worked. They had the right idea about what to do. And then the defense, Gina Messimer is the attorney here, whose work I have been very impressed by over the course of, well, at least a couple of years now, because she represented a lot of Des Moines protesters, too. Mm-hmm. And our friend Noah Peterson. She helped him
really?
Out with his Newton situation. Yeah.
Nice.
That was my first direct interaction with her, actually, was sending her the video that I took of Newton, or of Noah being arrested at Newton
right.
City Council. Yeah. So Gina directly quoted Tara saying the words, "Get your hands off me, and this is a protest, it's allowed," rather than vaguely alluding to something that Tara did not say. Gina directly quoted her to sort of establish the motivation behind Tara's actions. Cops were shoving people. Tara was trying to stand up for those people's rights to protest. All right. The only witnesses that the prosecution brought up were three University of Iowa police officers, Travis Tyrell, Adam Herrig, Ian Mallory. Obviously, Ian Mallory is the one that I have the most audio pulled for.
The specter haunting our podcast.
That's right. So the evidence that Tyrell is kind of important because the evidence that they brought up with him, his body cam footage, they were claiming included a clip of Tara telling protesters to stay in a group. There's a short clip where as the police were trying to force the intersection circle protest to move away from one lane of traffic, Tara is walking by and telling Lieutenant Tyrell, "No, this is a protest. These people are allowed to do this." And in between two things that Tara says, you hear somebody say, "Stay in a group." And they were claiming it was Tara. And it's not. As soon as I got home that night, I like pulled up that part of the body cam. And it's like, it's clearly not Tara saying it. You can see their mouth as the words "stay in a group" are heard. Tara's mouth is closed. This was their big piece of evidence to support the, you know, interference with official acts charge. If you are aiding and abetting or whatever by encouraging other people to defy police orders, that could maybe be construed as interference with official acts.
That still seems pretty flimsy, even if she did say it or if they did say it.
Yeah, yeah. I think so, too. And that was also clear in the room. It was like, one, that's not them saying it. Two, is saying "stay in a group" really enough to charge someone with interference with official acts? Like, staying in a group is something they should do whether they are, like, complying or not.
Yes. I believe, okay, I know the Constitution doesn't come into this, but I think the First Amendment applies to groups as well.
Mm-hmm. And staying in them or not.
Or not.
Oh, wait, there's a word for that.
Freedom assembly. Of assembly?
Assembling, yeah. Maybe if they had said "stay in an assembly," that could have been even harder to prosecute. So yeah, they presented that as evidence, and I was immediately suspicious and like getting ready to send timestamps to the defense. Like, pull this up, you better look at this. Adam Herrig on the stand was interesting because Adam Herrig had zero interactions with Tara at all at the protest.
Mm, good witness to call.
Yeah, they pulled him up, and it like his evidence was they pulled stills from his body cam that showed that there were cars present. It's like, wow.
Really?
Great. Really important that you brought this guy out. Although we did get a very important quote, I think. I think this kind of like establishes something that everyone should know in the Iowa City community. During cross-examination, Gina Messimer asked Adam Herrig, who is, I believe, a detective with the UIPD, if he has had any training on interference with official acts. You know, what is it? What constitutes interference? Differentiating, for example, between a verbal interaction versus something more significant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The prosecutor, then, Jacob Banky, he tried to object. He said, "Objection." And my notes here in parentheses say, "Conjecture, relevance, asking to interpret a law." So he seemed to have kind of a scattershot objection to that. And it was, in fact, overruled. But this led to Adam Herrig saying, people can say whatever they want to an officer. It's good to know.
Yeah.
I do think in terms of strategy, it's probably your best bet to not talk to a cop as much as possible.
Absolutely.
Because then they have no reason to remember who you are, really, if you have no interactions with them. And they don't know the law that well most of the time. So they may not know what Adam Herrick knows, that people can say whatever they want to an officer. There's the law, and then there's like what a cop will do to retaliate against you in the moment.
Right, right.
And you don't want to go through all this legal bullshit.
And often there's quite a big gap between those two things.
We should talk about Ian. Ian Mallory is a detective with the University of Iowa Police Department. He's a big wig in terms of investigations. He's the guy who's like at a desk reviewing footage, stalking people on the internet. He's an information gatherer, and he's the one who brought these charges against these protesters.
Is that his whole job, is just investigating protesters? Does he...
Oh, great question.
Ian, do you do anything like with like real crimes or like people get like hurt?
I'm so glad you asked this, Evan.
Victimized in any way?
Unfortunately, I had not hit record on my recorder yet, but the beginning of his testimony was sort of an explanation of what his job is, what he does. And Ian Mallory claims that most of his duties involve investigating crimes such as kidnapping, sexual assault, escape from custody, attempted murder, and high-dollar white-collar crimes.
Yeah?
This is the dude who looks at my Twitter and listens to this podcast.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think anyone who... Well, we don't know for sure, but people following you on Twitter, I don't think are doing any of those more serious crimes, such as kidnapping and sexual abuse. Like,
mm-hmm. The University of Iowa Police Department has a great track record when it comes to investigating sexual assault.
Right.
The university as a whole does a wonderful job making sure that they're preventing sexual assault and holding people accountable when they commit sexual assault.
Yeah.
And for example, being supportive of the organizations on campus that do help victims of sexual assault. Those people are very well supported on campus, especially by the University of Iowa Police Department. Yeah. There's a lot of mutual cooperation there. Nobody like undercuts the work of, the rape victim advocacy program on campus.
Yeah, you know, I think, one of the top party schools in the country, they could probably have multiple people on staff who solely investigated sexual abuse complaints.
Yeah, honestly. Yeah. There's work to be done, Ian. Maybe you should focus on that instead of people walking in a fucking crosswalk. Okay, getting into my audio now. We know that these charges came a month after the protest. So what's with that? Why was there such a delay? Why did it take so long to identify these people? If what they did was such a big deal, why weren't they arrested on site, you know? But in terms of why it took so long to file the charges.
Was the defendant arrested that day?
No.
Were they eventually arrested?
Yes.
Approximately how far after?
Almost a month.
Why did it take so long?
Very good question. I work 4 10-hour days in my normal work week, and then I have every other weekend as a 4-day weekend. So I believe this event occurred on a Monday, and I worked Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday that week. Friday, I went on vacation. I was on vacation from that Friday until November 1st, my first day back to work.
So it took so long because of his work schedule, and he also took a 2 to 3 week vacation. In there. So there's important investigations to be done.
Yeah,
on
you're letting the case
criminals.
Go cold. You're letting the case go cold, man. Come on.
And he's just running out of town, going to hang
Apparently
out on the beach.
Didn't investigate this one very well. Didn't get the outcome you're looking for.
Yeah, maybe this guy shouldn't have so much vacation time. Actually, you know what? Give him more vacation time. I think more work like this would actually be good for the community. So it's just sloppy. Can't even tell who's saying what in a video. So from Ian's perspective, he describes the protest tactics, which again It was people occupying an intersection by walking through each of the crosswalks in succession. And there's enough people protesting that that, in effect, makes the intersection unusable, right? There was a specific phrase that Ian used many times that I want to present to you now.
Can you kind of walk us through what's happening right now?
Sure. A group of people were around the outside of the I Am Warrior Union and then were encouraged to come out into the street, into the crosswalk. I've seen this this action before, where people will get into the crosswalk and then use a perpetual motion crossing all corners, all sides of the street. It gives the appearance that, oh, I'm using the crosswalk, but it also prohibits the usage of the streets from any which direction. Perpetual motion. Perpetual motion. Perpetual motion. Perpetual motion. Perpetual motion.
Damn, have we solved the concert, like the energy problems?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
We just need to harness the power of protesters walking through a crosswalk, and I think mm-hmm. we can, like, get rid of our dependence on fossil fuels.
Yeah, perpetual motion can be fueled by righteous indignation at transphobia, it turns out. We've solved the energy crisis with community consciousness. Yeah, he kept saying it, and people kept glancing at each other in the courtroom like, that's not what that means. there was a bit about, so Travis Tyrell is the person who interacted with Tara the most that night, and he did not mention them in his initial report. I'm using all kinds of pronouns now for every person.
Yeah.
Everyone is masculine, feminine, and neutral on this podcast.
I believe that.
Yeah, that's somewhat true, actually. There is one gender.
Yeah.
Anyway, Travis Tyrell did not mention Tara on his initial report. And Tara was, I don't believe we've discussed this on the podcast, Tara was initially identified by somebody in the county attorney's office. So at some point, while the UIPD was building their case, considering bringing charges against these protesters, Ian Mallory met with the county attorney's office to see if they concurred that there's enough evidence here to bring charges forth. There were no mentions of Tara in the police reports at this point. There was no intention to charge Tara with a crime at this point, but somebody in the county attorney's office, who has not been identified publicly by anyone here, happened to recognize Tara while they were reviewing footage. And this is honestly, I think that this is what raised a lot of doubt probably for the jury, is like, if these actions were not significant enough to be in a report initially, and it took somebody else happening to know who this person was a month later.
And the only people you're calling are to the stand are people who were not able to positively identify this person.
Right, right. So once this person was, this whoever this was, recognized Tara, this sparked something in Ian's memory. Ian remembers Tara from reviewing their social media, monitoring Tara online years ago. Tara came to Ian Mallory's attention because they spoke out against the Johnson County Sheriff's Office trying to purchase a bear cat back in 2021, which was actually the subject of an episode of our podcast with Dan Cauble at the time. I remember I asked Tara if they wanted to come on the show at that time, and they were too busy. So that would have been an interesting thing to look back at. Anyway, nothing that Tara did in 2021 regarding speaking out against a militarized vehicle being purchased by a law enforcement agency, that's not a crime. Like, is that really a reason for a University of Iowa police detective to start monitoring their social media? And like, this, it's like, it's public posts, so it's like not a huge deal, but like, what's the motivation behind that? And then to
I think we
them.
Can come to some conclusions about the motivation, but I think we can leave it up to the listeners to figure that out.
Yeah, yeah. I got a couple of good clips here of Gina Messimer asking Ian Mallory about his online activities.
In terms of identifying Tara Dutcher, you mentioned that you monitor social media a great deal, correct?
I didn't say a great deal, but I do monitor social media, yes.
But not a great deal?
Sure.
Sorry about the audio quality in the courtroom is not the best, but if you didn't quite understand, Gina was like, you monitor social media a great deal? And he says, I didn't say a great deal, but I do monitor social media, yes. Here's something about Tara's posts.
Returning to this issue of your monitoring of Tara Dutcher's social media, what were these prior posts that you were monitoring by Tara Dutcher? What was the subject matter? Why were you looking at Tara Dutcher's social media?
I was looking at Tara Dutcher's social media because she's active in the community. She speaks up against different governmental organizations, and she's generally an activist.
Was there a particular issue?
Gotcha. Yes.
What was that?
Tara Dutcher was a vocal opponent of the Johnson County Sheriff's Office trying to purchase an armored militarized vehicle in 2021.
Okay.
Right. It's pretty straightforward, right? Like, you're paying attention to this person because they
Express
the First Amendment rights.
Expressed an opinion, like, about literally the community that they live in. Like,
prior to this event, when the last time you looked at Tara Dutcher's social media?
Probably 2021.
You forgot who they were?
Yes.
Claims he forgot who Tara was.
Wow.
And hasn't looked at their posts since 2021. Follow-up from the defense, though.
When was the last time you looked at Tara Dutcher's social media?
Probably a week ago.
Is that something you've been doing on a regular basis while this case has been pending?
When I charge someone with a crime, I oftentimes try to locate a person's social media account. Oftentimes, a person who's charged with a crime will make disclosures or admissions in the public forum that I use against them at a trial later on.
Is there anything that Tara Dutcher posted online from what you monitored that is relevant to this case?
No.
Okay. When he charges someone with a crime, he tries to pay attention to their social media to see if they admit to a crime in a public forum. You know, to be fair, that's a bad idea to do that, and he's...
Yeah.
It would be useful to him to have that evidence.
Yes. Yes.
So don't do that. If Ian Mallory charges you with the crime, probably best to lay off the post for a little bit. However, he was asked, did Tara post anything that is relevant to this case in the past couple of weeks? And he said no. But yeah, they have. I think Tara's posts have been very relevant to the case. Is there something Tara posted that you don't want the jury to know about, Ian? All right. So after the witnesses that the defense called, I think that's enough listening to Ian's voice. He's gotten enough of a thrill out of that today, being featured on his favorite podcast.
Yeah.
Something kind of unusual happened after the jury was dismissed. The defense put forward a motion for a directed verdict. I think that's the correct term for this. Essentially, the reasoning being that the evidence that the state presented on day one of the trial was really lacking.
Yeah.
In terms of supporting the charges that were being made.
Yeah.
And this is... I mean, from what I can tell, I'm a complete novice at this, but
I think
from
it's
what
literally
I can tell,
the evidence that they presented does not support that a crime actually occurred.
Yes. Yes. And from what I can tell, this is sort of like a standard procedure for a defense attorney to make a motion like this. And it's very customarily just, you know, denied. Because it's like, you got to let this go to the jury.
Yes, because typically
you know?
The prosecution presents evidence that does support the idea that a crime has occurred.
Right. Usually they have more of a case than this. But this was, honestly, the state prosecution was so bad that the judge actually entertained this. Which is
that's
like...
so good. So good.
Nearly unprecedented, at least the way that he was talking about it. So... he was sort of like grilling the prosecutor, like, can you defend your case here? Like, while we're all still here, like, what do you have to say for yourself? And he was relying on the stay in a group comment, which wasn't Tara. It's not Tara's voice. Like, he made it clear that this is a big part of their case was that clip. And I don't know if I had anything to do with them changing course overnight. But the next day, they weren't talking about that at all. And in fact, they stressed multiple times, we're not alleging that Tara was committing any kind of verbal harassment or verbal threats. Nothing about what Tara said.
Because you can say anything you want to a police officer.
Their own fucking witness came on the stand and said, you can say whatever you want to an officer. And their case relied on Tara saying, stay in a group as evidence of interference with official acts.
Wow.
So, yeah, like I said, I went home that night and I reviewed the footage and I went through frame by frame and I tweeted all this. Like, I have this evidence and it's not what they say it is. And then the next day, that was gone. That was no longer part of their strategy. The judge did end up denying the motion for a directed verdict, perhaps expecting that the jury was going to find Tara not guilty. And honestly, being acquitted in that fashion is probably a better outcome than the judge just throwing it out, right?
Yeah.
Because then everyone knows that, like, the state did their best to like, convict Tara and failed.
Yeah.
What a mess. So without having that clip to rely on, their argument was that Tara's proximity to Travis Tyrell was sufficient to charge them with interference with official acts, which I think just appeared to be absurd to everyone.
I would say so.
I should play this clip from the judge. So the first thing we did the morning of day two was, you know, the judge said, I'll consider this overnight. We'll talk about it in the morning, the directed verdict thing. And this is sort of his final decision. This is what he said.
Whether or not it's true or not, the jury is going to call. And even if the evidence is not convincing, the jury is going to call the decision on that.
So he's basically saying, you know, we got to let the jury decide on this, even if the evidence is not
strong.
That long pause is great. All right, so day two pretty much was Tara on the stand. Gina talked to Tara for a while, and then Jacob Binky got to cross-examine Tara. And I was here to be the most biased reporter ever. the most sympathetic media could ever be. And Tara is my friend, so I would say this regardless probably, but I think Tara nailed it. Like, did a fantastic job on the stand. The prosecution was very ineffective, but I think that Tara stood on their principles in a very clear and honest and convincing way and was untouchable. Like, I've been committed to these crimes. I don't feel I did anything wrong. I don't agree with your interpretation of my actions, I guess.
Yeah.
I'll play a couple examples of Tara. This is from the Tara being examined by their own defense attorney, explaining the events of the night.
As a parent, and as a person, I understand pedestrian walkways to be where pedestrians walk.
Can't be more clear than that.
Yeah.
I got to thank Zachary Oren Smith of Iowa Public Radio for that audio, because I was not recording this portion of the trial. And he had a better mic than me, as you can hear.
So the big media bucks get you. You got to survive on Patreon with your little Zoom pocket recorder.
Here it is. This is what I was using. Same device that's recorded shows since like 2015. This is Tara's description of the footage of the perpetual motion circle.
From the footage, we look like ducklings on parade walking in a circle without interruption.
Ducklings on parade.
What about bulls on parade?
Yeah, bulls on parade. Gina brought up the clip, the stay in a group clip, and played it at quarter speed for the jury and the public. I may not play this entire clip, but you got to hear this. You got to hear what this sounds like.
Only because I say something before and after it, and it doesn't seem physically possible for me to say that before and after thing, and then in an entirely different voice that isn't mine, say, stay in a group.
Okay, I'm going to back up and try playing this in quarter speed from 1321.
There were so many people watching this trial, and there are so many moments that are so funny, and it's discouraged to, you know, laugh to the point of disrupting the trial, but sometimes you can't help
it. What can you do? Yeah, I mean, yeah. You're presented with something like that.
You're going to jail. it's so fun.
Are you going to sample that in any of your music?
I've been thinking about that for a while. Like, I spent so much time watching all these videos. Like, why don't I just fucking turn one on during a noise set? Just let that be part of the texture. What else should I pull out of Tara's testimony here? I'm going to go skip ahead to the cross-examination, because this, I think, is where Tara really shined. Prosecution is trying to grill Tara and be like, look, you intended to block traffic, and that's bad, is basically the argument. This is a 5-minute clip. I'm not going to let the whole thing go, but I just really need people to hear how they interacted with each other and who comes out of this looking better. So this is sort of a back and forth about a pedestrian's rights in a pedestrian walkway.
Now, you mentioned that you walked in the pedestrian walkway because you wanted to be with your community, correct?
I was walking where my community was walking us.
You could have stayed on the sidewalk, correct?
I couldn't have walked in a walkway while standing on the sidewalk.
You had other options besides walking in that crosswalk, correct?
Sure. I could have not walked in the crosswalk.
You were there to protest, yes?
I was there as a trans person with my trans community to show that trans people belong in Iowa City and that we deserve to be respected. Yes.
And you could have gotten that same message out while being on the sidewalk, correct?
I don't understand the question.
You could have protested the same issue while being on the sidewalk and not in the street, correct?
People were standing on the sidewalk who were there in community, yes.
You could have gone to Hubbard Park and did the same protest at Hubbard Park, correct?
Hubbard Park is not where the event was.
But it was right next to where the event was.
Hubbard Park, if you all are familiar, is the green space that's next to the IMU. There's like a little chapel there. So I could have gone somewhere other than where the event was, but I chose instead to go where the event was.
And that's because this intersection would get the most attention to your cause, correct?
The intersection is a pedestrian walkway where pedestrians walk, and that is what we did in the pedestrian walkway.
Now, there's 27 minutes of video.
And again, I have 5 minutes of this. Let me just play a little bit of the end of it.
This is a pedestrian walkway that is not trying to be cleared by police. So if I walked in the pedestrian walkway and there are cars that are up to the pedestrian walkway, it's still a pedestrian walkway, and my understanding is that pedestrians have the right of way in the pedestrian walkway. I never was walking in the lane of traffic that was trying to be cleared.
So you wanted police involvement?
Absolutely not. I have no interest in any involvement with police.
They were going out of their way not to jaywalk, and you're trying to punish them?
Right, yeah.
Come on.
It's honestly demonstrating the power of walking in the pedestrian walkway.
Yeah.
Because anyone observing this argument is going to say, like, it's a fucking crosswalk.
Yeah.
Like, what are you going to do about it? Like, I don't know how you can really convince people that it's a crime to walk through a series of crosswalks.
Yeah, it's not.
I agree, it's not. This is a short clip that I think is funny.
you didn't hear any honking?
I'm sure I heard honking. I mean, we're trans people walking in public, so we're used to hearing honking, frankly.
So is it your testimony that they were only honking because you were trans individuals?
I can't begin to know the motive of why somebody would choose to honk, but I do know that it is difficult to be a trans person in Iowa.
Just decimated. Completely redirecting the whole focus of that question.
Yeah, I mean, is that a crime, making cars honk?
And even like making,
like, what is, like, the, what is the point? Like,
that's their choice to honk. They can honk if they want.
Yeah.
What does a honk mean? Are there like legal requirements to respond to a honk?
Honk means I'm currently being victimized by traffic control devices.
Yeah. Honking is just like, it's just like a car saying damn.
That is factually, I think, the most factual statement on the podcast so far. Honks are cars saying damn. Yeah, that's going in the books.
So they can't really use the stay in a group comment anymore. Here is the argument, the evidence that Tara was interfering with official acts from the prosecution's perspective.
But you put yourself near them while they were trying to clear this lane, correct?
When officers were pushing and grabbing my community members, I took my phone out and recorded my community members being pushed and grabbed by police officers. Yes.
And you got so close as to being within touching distance of Travis Tyrell as he was trying to clear the intersection, correct?
As we saw on the footage yesterday, Lieutenant Tyrell did, in fact, grab my wrist while I was recording, yes.
And that's because you walked close to him that he was able to do that, correct?
As you could see from the footage, Lieutenant Tyrell was grabbing literally anyone that was anywhere near him.
While he was trying to clear the intersection, correct? Or clear the corner, correct?
Lieutenant Tyrell was grabbing and pushing people while he was trying to clear the corner. Is that the question?
Yes.
Yes, Lieutenant Tyrell was grabbing and pushing people while he was trying to clear the corner. Which I cleared.
I have nothing further, Your Honor.
That's so good.
Their, like, own evidence worked against them.
Can they just like throw in the white flag? Like, has there been a trial where they're just like, never mind?
Yeah, can you drop charges like during the trial?
During the trial.
Your Honor, they got me. Like, how are you gonna stand in a room full of people and say, like, this guy grabbing your wrist is like, that only happened because you were close enough to be grabbed. That's you committing a crime, being grabbed. You enabled that by being within grabbing distance.
Yeah. We measured the gravitational fields between, I mean, your body and his body.
That's funny that you mentioned measurement, because I think this was during the discussion of the potential directed verdict when they were talking about proximity being sufficient evidence for interference. The judge said something like, there's really nothing in case law establishing that being near an officer is interference. There's no like foot rule. He said that there's no foot rule.
Well, maybe they're trying to set new precedents, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't any case law about it before.
Yeah, that, you know, that would have been good for them, I think, to God, imagine that. Imagine establishing that simply being near a cop is interference.
Yeah,
with
they would
acts.
Love that.
Ugh. That's how they think already. So, like, being able to back that up with case law would be wonderful for them.
Yeah.
Thank God Tara took this to trial and won.
Yeah.
And I think the fact, you know, drawing so much attention to Tyrell grabbing Tara's wrist looked so bad for the prosecution, because the video shows Tara holding a phone recording police, and that's the wrist that Tyrell grabs. So there's like a clear visual, like physical connection that the jury sees, that's like, this is a cop basically reacting in hostility to being filmed.
Mm-hmm.
There's no, like, that's the implication, or like, not, it's not even implied. Like,
Yeah.
That's what that looks like. That's what's happening. They don't like being recorded, and they don't like that it's, you know, legally protected activity.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, I got to talk about the defense's closing statement. This is maybe the most memorable stuff for me. Gina Messimer is a really good defense attorney for civil rights cases. So if you're a person who is in a situation like this, if you can get in touch with Gina, I think you should. Let me play a couple clips of Gina Messimer here.
Tara didn't say that. That's not Tara. It's someone else around her. You can see Tara's mouth for part of it, and Tara's not the one saying it. And if an officer's going to come in here and testify that that makes you a criminal, I think perhaps the officer should listen to the video a few times. Maybe the officer should be really confident and put the work in to know that before they come in and say the wrong thing and accuse somebody of a crime.
Yeah, agree.
Again, decimated. A piece of evidence just utterly discredited. Something that they got a police lieutenant on the stand testifying. This is the person that I've identified right there, the defendant. This is the person saying, directing a group of people to defy police orders. It's not even Tara. You fucked up so bad. They've opened themselves up to just being completely discredited.
Yeah. In a case that has had national attention, like, even before the trial, like...
Yeah. I'm glad that they did such a bad job.
Yeah.
But it's like, how do you get away with this? How is this your job? Okay, so the real story with the closing statement from Gina Messimer is that the prosecutor objected four times during the closing statement, which I've been told is a real faux pas. When it comes to a jury trial, it's a really bad move, apparently, to object during a closing statement unless it's like really, really out of bounds. And he did it four times. Honestly, what was the first one? I don't even remember what the first objection was, but it was something about Tara's intent while protesting. But that wasn't the big one. The big thing is that he objected three times in the span of like a minute and a half, just rapid fire objections, all of which were overruled. This is the final impression he's making on the jury. Just absolute flailing. I mean, it came across as like really dirty, dirty behavior. Like, you know, you did a bad job, and like your only remaining tool is to like interrupt the closing statement so that the message is harder to convey.
Yeah, it seems like
That's what it felt like in the moment. And you could even see, like, the defense, like, on that third objection was like, like, disbelief. Like, you're really doing this? Let me play the clip of when that first of the three rapid-fire objections came up. And just hear what Gina says and, like, think about why a prosecutor would not want a jury to hear the words that are being spoken here.
And I do want to talk about the motivation for these officers' testimony. Because we heard a little bit about the timeline of how this happened. We have Lieutenant Tyrell who talked about, he wrote a report immediately after this incident, talked about people he interacted with, about people that maybe committed crimes, about his planning, about his presence there, everything in this lengthy report. And that report did not mention Tara Dutcher, didn't mention any identified person, didn't identify this interaction that Lieutenant Tyrell had with Tara Dutcher. We also have Detective Mallory, who testified, I did an original list of people to suggest for charges. Tara Dutcher was not on that list. But then there's a meeting with the county attorney, and Tara Dutcher is somehow identified, and Detective Mallory remembers, oh, I was surveilling Tara Dutcher's social media years ago, and she was against the police getting an armored vehicle. And then only after that meeting does Detective Mallory charge Tara Dutcher and then tells Lieutenant Tyrell, go write up another report that's all about Tara Dutcher. Does that strike anyone as odd? What's the motivation there? Charges like this are a way to silence dissent.
Objection, Your Honor.
What's your objection?
I oppose.
Sure.
Prosecutions like this are an effort to silence dissent. He doesn't want people thinking about that. Because it's the fucking truth.
Yeah, because it's, I mean, like, she didn't, like, she even needed to say that. Like, I mean.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was in everyone's head already. Everything that they presented was a clear expression of that intent.
That doesn't really make any sense at all for any other interpretation. Like,
mm-hmm. They want this stuff to stop happening. Having watched all of the footage myself, there are clips of people in administrative roles at the university talking to Lieutenant Travis Tyrell, who was in charge of the UIPD on the scene, telling him, like, we want this to stop now. Like, you need to intervene. And that's right when, it's right before this group of police started engaging physically with the protesters. Right after a member of university administration expressed his displeasure with the situation. After the circle protest, the perpetual motion ceases, and the protest went up the hill towards the university president's residence. There's footage of two of the officers meeting up with the university president, just up the hill, a little ways off. There's a conversation between the cops and the university president, Barbara Wilson, where she expresses, you know, confusion and surprise that there are so many people protesting. They engage in speculation that I'm sure a lot of these people aren't even students. They're community members.
Yeah.
As if the university and Iowa City can be separated. Like, you own half the fucking town. Like, you can't be in Iowa City without encountering the university. Community members have as much of a right to protest the events on this campus as students, faculty, and staff do.
Yeah. If the university really didn't want it to happen, they would stop approving these events from occurring in the first place.
Maybe. Maybe they would.
I don't know, but, you know, the legal stuff behind that, or if right, they I can do that, but...
Yeah, I think that's the issue, is, like, what does free speech mean?
Yeah.
How do we encourage free speech? Is it rubber stamping every fucking bigoted piece of shit that this one student group invites to campus and attempting to quash all dissent, discourage all people from demonstrating against that continued bigotry? Because that's the plan so far. That's what they've been engaging in.
Yeah, I mean, you can't just, like, tell people to not react to this stuff. Like, it's, people are aware that it's a concerted effort to literally, like, remove people's civil rights.
Yeah.
Like, yep. People are going to react to that.
Right.
And they're going to...
People enjoy, or, you know, they appreciate having rights.
Yeah. And, you know, it's legal. Like, in most cases, it's perfectly mm-hmm. legal.
Yeah. I'm going to play a short clip of something Gina Messimer said that brought tears to my eyes in the moment.
Tara Detre is a very conscientious person. It has been an honor to represent Tara.
It has been an honor to represent Tara. And I want to say personally, it's been an honor to be an officially recognized member of the media covering this trial. I actually thought about conversations we've had with Marcos from the Ain't Shit Show.
Yeah,
and his
yeah.
explanation of homieism over the past week.
Yeah.
And how, you know, he says it in a funny way that sort of, like, simplifies it to, like, the very basic concept. But, like, the idea that you want everyone to be your homie. And that, like, solves problems. And that's, I feel like we demonstrated that with the outcome of this trial. Like, I am very proud that I've been, like, trusted and accepted among this group of, like, especially here in Iowa, marginalized people. Mm-hmm. Like, I am the, in the eyes of, like, societal expectations, I am the default person.
Yeah.
I'm a cisgender, heterosexual, white, conservative Christian male.
Me too, brother. Me too.
And I've been really, like, like I said, trusted. Like, I've been really embraced by a group of people who are being persecuted. And I've been able to, like, try to cut through the bullshit and just, like, say, like, these people don't deserve to be going through this shit. It needs to stop.
Yeah.
They're all my homies, and I'm their homie. And we, this week, defeated the power of the state through the power of love and friendship.
That's very touching.
We're not allowed to communicate with the jury with bathroom graffiti, but there are methods of communication that are so subtle and not exactly tangible, but like a room full of people that jury can see, like they almost become our homies.
Absolutely. I'm totally 100% down with that theory. And just, yeah, I mean, setting an example is important and has psychological effects on other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm also very proud that Tara and the rest of the trans protesters who have been prosecuted over the past few months, they had a press conference Thursday night and really seized the moment to, like, expand the awareness of, like, this ongoing struggle and, like, what needs to happen to make this community fucking flourish. Mm-hmm. So I put that on the podcast feed the other day, like everything that everybody said. So if you haven't listened to that yet, I would encourage hearing from the people themselves rather than only hearing it through my interpretations. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. We got an important voicemail actually this week, if we're ready to wrap things up.
Yeah. Let's go.
All right. Friends, you can call us at 319-849-8733. Call us about anything you want, but this is somebody calling to, well, it's somebody that we've talked about a lot, and he finally reached out himself.
Uh-oh.
My name's Ian Mallory, and I'm here to say I'm bad at my job in a major way. I'm a stupid cop. I like to sit around. I'm never going to stop until I wrap something profound. They pay me lots of money to read lots of posts. It ain't even funny. Stalking podcast hosts. I like to get on the stand after my vacation. I suffer from gout and chronic masturbation. There's a man named Bucky. He's fucking my wife. I'm very unlucky. Got me some major strikes. Come to Iowa City. You'll have lots of fun. Unless I'm feeling shitty, then you'll see my gun. If you're a little gay, you shouldn't have to worry. If you don't obey, I'll push you down in a hurry. I don't like the ladies. I hope you get the hint. I'm going to burn in Hades. Google cops 40%. Yeah. MCIM Weasel. You know what it is.
Damn. Ian's got bars.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody, all white guys out there, call in and rap a couple verses for us. I would love for this podcast to be the receptacle for just off the dome voicemail rap.
that was incredible.
Google cops 40% was the takeaway from that. And don't forget to Google jury nullification while you're on your computer. A useful tool for the future.
Yep.
You can also send us physical mail at P.O. Box 5336 in Coralville, Iowa. Zip code 52241. I am playing a show tonight at Close House, 538 South Gilbert Street. I'll be playing my saxophone and other bullshit. And my friend Christine Burke is playing, and Ben Zucker from Chicago will be here playing as well. I believe he's bringing a vibraphone.
Nice.
If you show up and he doesn't have a vibraphone, I'm sorry for misleading you.
It's got to be hard to transport, right?
Yeah, you can kind of, you take them apart and all the bars stay on like little strings.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's not so bad, but it takes a minute to get it put back together right. Because all the bars have to be adjusted into the right spot.
A lot of parts.
Mm-hmm. Also playing a show at the same spot this Wednesday, March 20th. I'll be part of the Christine Burke Ensemble for that show. We're going to be, this incarnation of the Christine Burke Ensemble is baritone saxophone, B-flat clarinet, flute, and bassoon. So we're a wind quartet. And we'll be sharing the bill with a free jazz, well, that may be a misrepresentation, but an improvisation quartet out of Minneapolis called Short Americans is coming down.
Cool.
As always, you can visit my website, justinkcomer.com/shows, and I'll put stuff up there when the shows come up. You got any more events this week, Evan? You had a couple DSA things last week.
I did, but
How did those go? Good time?
I didn't make it to the protests, unfortunately. Both my girlfriend and I ended up getting a little sick. But I will be trying to hopefully share more events going forward.
Awesome.
Not as involved in the community as Justin yet, but maybe we'll get there.
Yeah, for sure. I think I'm happy to for our show to be like a resource for people in both towns and statewide. I think
absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we're all about raising awareness of what's going on and trying to support the events and causes that we care about. So
that's how you be a homie.
That is a good way to be a homie, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Over here in Johnson County, we have an opportunity to elect a homie to a public office. Mandy Remington running for Johnson County Democratic in the Democratic primary for Johnson County Supervisor on June 4th. Mandy4supervisor.com. I just got a yard sign yesterday, so I'm really committed now.
Yeah, I think it's a lot easier to be apathetic in Des Moines as well, because there's actually like some good things happening in Iowa City sometimes. And, you know, we have a at-large city council
that's
election
right,
coming up this month that is a fucking disaster. And the guy who's going to win fucking sucks. And
yeah,
it's unfortunate. There's just not a lot of motivation to change anything. Des Moines.
Yeah, I think Des Moines people have perfectly understandable reasons to feel less hope. Yeah.
Yeah.
Given the past
email
few
your
years.
City councilor about DART. That's a good one. I've already done that a couple times. Don't know what will come of it, but they've been talking about reducing the services and the routes that DART buses run on. And that obviously is affecting a lot of low income people.
Yeah.
People who, you know, rely on that and will have to make who knows what other arrangements just to live their lives, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
why do we need to make it harder for people whose lives are already a pain in the ass?
Well, because we don't want to pay for some buses. Like, I mean, it's insane. Like,
yeah,
they're not doing a good job.
Yeah.
Fuck Mike Simonson.
If you like the free episodes of the show that we release, you would probably like the stuff that we hide behind a paywall at patreon.com/rockhardcaucus. We've got a real good one coming soon. I have not had time to edit yet, but a new episode of Bay Not Me Slippin', our Slipknot review series.
Yeah.
Evan and I talked with our old friend Teddy the other night about the Slipknot self-titled album. Looking forward to releasing that because I think it was really fun.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. It's good to catch up.
Yeah. All right. One last thing I have to do. I have to be the bearer of bad news if there's somehow anyone out there who doesn't already know. Chris Wiersema of the Feed Me Weird Things series in Iowa City passed away the other night. He was honestly too important for me to even explain it all right now, but very important to me personally and my development as an artist myself and as a proponent of the experimental in music especially. So I'm going to close out today's show with a short clip of him performing with his duo Law back in 2010. He played a set on a very early I Hear I See show before I even lived in Iowa City. So this is an old clip that not a lot of people have actually heard. And then I'm going to follow that up with about a 3-minute clip of Chris talking on my old radio show about why he did what he did, why he lived where he lived, and why he engaged in the activities that he did, that I think is a nearly perfect summation of like why he and I got along so well. So I'm sorry he's gone, and I'm proud to have known him and to be able to present this to you now at the end of the show. All right. Thank you, Evan. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Tara, for doing a fantastic job beating the state.
Yes. Cheers to that.
Hell yeah. All right. Be good to each other. We're all homies. Good night.
So for me here, and what makes Iowa City great, and I think people don't really get it until they leave, traditionally, from what I've talked to people who've left, is the amount of autonomy that Iowa City affords is something unlike anywhere else where you can just try stuff. So after my undergraduate was concluded, you know, I was like, crap, do I move back to Chicago? I hate the city. And if I hate that city, like, I actually just don't like cities. I came, and it was like, but the music I want to see is there.
Right.
And it's like, what if I just see if the music I want to see wants to come here? And where we're geographically located, it's not like people are like, oh, yes, I've always wanted to come to Iowa City. A couple people say that, but I assume they're saying it to be nice. But we're right on I-80. We are like the perfect routing. Like, no, we're not a destination.
Yeah.
We're a good place to stop on the way. And so it's been fortunate like that. But, yeah, I mean, there is a community. I mean, Iowa City has actually a long secret history with the avant-garde. I mean, going back to the Stanley Museum of Art. I mean, what their collection is a lot of abstract expressionism, which when they were buying it up in the 50s and the early 60s, people thought they were out of their mind, especially here. you know, people just want Grant Wood over and over again. And, you know, I lived in this house, like Captain Beefheart stayed there when he played a Gabe's to like 100 people. You know, there's, which for Captain Beefheart, that's like 9 people.
right.
But so, I mean, once I started doing it and like uncovering a lot of this history, I was like, well, this is actually something I want to be like a shepherd for. And even more than that, like, I've seen so many good shows, like, and I'm going to sound like a total burnout now, but, like, you know, I have a lot of religion, but there are moments of ecstaticism that I have felt during performances that I can only equate to what people who have religion feel. You know, that sort of filling of the vacuum. And I mean, I was in Spain, Primavera, I think, one year. And the Boredoms were playing. Like, the stage was like right near the beach. And like, it was like 5 a.m. and the sun was coming up. And then there was this crescendo of like 9 drums. And it was like, man, this is one of the closest things I've felt to like religion and being like, oh, there's something more. And so just like, you know, the gratitude of having those experiences, like, I want other people to have them. I don't want to beat them to death to get them, like, but I want to present opportunities to where others can feel that, because I like a lot of lazy people like myself. I have such like existential vertigo that anytime I've tried to do volunteering, You know, like, I just get sucked into just how bleak everything really is. And I end up, like, I can't be a help. But I figure, like, if I can offer a situation where somebody can feel what I've felt, like, maybe I can just make things, like, a little bit better for 10 minutes. And, you know, maybe that's, like, the capacity of what I've got. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I do it.